This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Currently in downtown Wausau at our studios at the corner of Washington Street and North 3rd Street. Overcast skies and 29 degrees. It is day number 366 of 2024, the final day of the year, and it is the Chad Holmes Show here on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. If you would like to join us, if you have anything on your mind, any remembrances, anything you'd like to say before we finish up 2024 and head into 2025, you can join us by calling or texting at 715-382-9297. That's 715-382-9297. You can either call or text us at that number. And of course, you can always use the Civic Media app as well. Before we go any further with my guest across the way on a Tuesday, which is a surprise, which is a pleasant surprise, need to say good morning to our in-studio engineer and our producer, Ian Welsh. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
Well, it is the final day of 2024. I know you're excited for 2025. We'll have more with you coming up, but I need to introduce our special guest to wrap up the year with. Very happy to have him be with us for our final show of 2024. He joins us normally on every other Wednesday, but today here on Tuesday, Mr. Bob Look. Bob, good morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. And, obviously no show tomorrow with New Year's Day.
We actually do have one. It's in the can, but it's all new.
right. But
not live here.
But glad you're able to be moving to Tuesday here, because it would be nice one more time before we close out 2024. And there's so many things that we could talk about, point out, and gripe about, or say great things about. But my thought process kind of changed a lot with the passing of President Jim Carter. Earlier a couple days ago, and the reason why probably I stopped a lot of, in my mind and thought about it, because he was the first president that I ever got to vote for. I was in 72, I wasn't old enough yet. I was only 17, so I wasn't registered to vote yet. But the first president candidate that I could vote for was in 1976, and it was such a crazy time. I got my excitement with politics in 72, because in that year, the primary, the Wisconsin primary, was very important for the picking of who the Democratic candidate would be. Senator Eugene McCarthy was really popular in 68. Mm-hmm. He had a little run in there. And, of course, this is following the assassinations of Robert F. Kennedy, in 68. But since 72, it was like the Democratic Party was like, where are we going? And it was from John Lindsay, the mayor of New York. He was part of that. He also had Ed Muskie. It was in that, and he was the prohibitive leader.
Mm-hmm.
But his run for it kind of just hit the brakes when he got to Wisconsin. And here's this peanut farmer from Georgia who really started running for president over a year before he came. I mean, he, you know, and it was like nobody paid attention to him, but he just stuck with it and just kept, you know, talking to people, shaking hands, meeting people. And the more and more people got to hear him, and you know, that's when he, you know, he picked up the stuff in 76 was he picked up that momentum because the Democratic Party was pretty much dead in the water in 72. Because George McGovern was the candidate and only won
39%, I think, something like that. But you don't see 20+ percentage point wins anymore, except in gerrymandered districts. But that was the country. That showed how bad things were right there for the Democrats.
It was kind of a lost in space moment, to use an old TV show's title to go. But Jimmy Carter, I remember, you know, in that situation, because I started, you know, working in Port Washington at the radio station there. I was starting out my career.
Right.
And doggone it, I mean, not only Jimmy Carter was a avid campaigner, but his whole family was. Mm-hmm. His son Chip was working the streets and working the bars and that in Port Washington, going, you know, bar to bar, just shaking his hand. Hi, I'm Chip Carpenter. I'm the son of Jim Carter, who's running for president. Appreciate your vote. You know, and I just looked at that. I went, wow, he's going everywhere. I mean, he really was. And somehow, some way, they were getting into the minds of the voters. And eventually he came out. And again, it was a big surprise. There was a lot of people who just thought, well, this isn't going to really work well for them. Well, he ended up defeating Gerald Ford, who had never voted in as president.
Right.
He was never voted in as vice president. He took over for Spiro Agnew, who got into some legal problems.
And then if you take the next step, for people that really know the history, later in life, Carter and Ford became great friends.
Great friends.
Not just people worked here, but they were friends, which is, you know, pretty amazing in itself. And I remember when Jerry Ford died, that Jimmy Carter gave one of the really best eulogies. I mean, it was just really fantastic.
So, you know, whatever you think of President Carter, what I always was impressed with, well, first of all, was when he was able to get Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, Israel and Egypt, to actually get together and to work out an agreement to try to find something that's unheard of in the Middle East, and that is peace. And they signed that accords, and shows you the strength and the bravery of those two leaders of those countries, because there was the factions on both sides that didn't want, they don't look for peace. And I firmly believe that there's just a faction of people out there just likes fighting.
I know.
That likes conflict, that likes uneasiness. And I, the working together mantra seems to be not as advocated as much as we hope it be. And it was pretty much on display this past November.
And one of my earliest memories, it involved Jimmy Carter back in early 1979. Mm-hmm. Remember when he came to Central Wisconsin?
I wasn't here at the time. I hadn't moved here, but I remember, you know, he was.
It was apparently for the 10th anniversary of Dave Olby being a congressman, and apparently there was an event over at Newman Catholic High School, and I remember being a student at Rothschild Elementary School, and I remember still to this day going out, you know, at the big hill by Rothschild School. It's up there on top.
Oh, yeah.
And we were all out there and saw the presidential motorcade go by, and you know, one of the aspects about the presidency, you remember as a kid, the thought that, you know, that it's big, it's important. And it was such a eye-opening experience, and that the president was going down the road right in front of our school. It was amazing.
I was in New Orleans back in 1973. With the South Milwaukee Municipal Band, we have our yearly trip, but coupled in with the trip, we would also be performing. We were in the VFW National Parade that in New Orleans. So we marched in that parade, but we put together a like a little getaway for the band, and we ended up playing in the Bourbon Street. I sat in with Pete Fountain's band down there in Preservation Hall and all that kind of stuff, and President Richard Nixon was going to address the VFW convention, and they had this, you know, the route that the motorcade was supposed to take, and it was early enough in the day, and I got out to go there to just, you know, see the limousine go by or whatever. Unfortunately, I guess the Secret Service got heads up about some attempt, possibly of an assassination, and so they canceled the ride through, and they took different routes. So we were all kind of waiting there, and all of a sudden they made the announcements. Well, we had to reroute the president, and but I got up, you know, early in the morning, go be there. And it's because it's what citizens are supposed to do, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I still feel that way too, even today. You know, if a situation, you know, would arise, I would, you know, try to make a attempt to be there, because after all, this is the one who is supposed to be our leader.
And of course, we talk about the years he was president. I think what many people are talking about is the way that he used his, I mean, it's amazing how many decades, 4.5 decades after he left the White House, doing incredible work with his hands for Habitat for Humanity. I mean, when you think about that, you think about the other presidents since then, whether they were Republican or Democrat, first thing they mostly have done is try to make money. Jimmy Carter didn't do that.
What he did for Habitat for Humanity was something that was pretty important in my eyes, and also in my wife's eyes. That when we, you know, whenever we did work or volunteer work or fundraising, and that was one of our main things to help out with, and to try to help, you know, do the work that they're doing. If you influence people by your actions, and it's positive reactions, isn't that just what your life is supposed to be on this earth? So I salute him, and I you know, now he and Rosalind can spend their lives, not lives, but their spirits together.
And I heard a number of like 14,000 where Jimmy Carter, with his own hands, worked on houses.
Yeah, 14,000 houses.
Not just 14, you know, bruising his name or his money.
Actual hands-on.
Hammered. Amazing, amazing stuff.
Yep.
Coming up, we have another segment. Brittany's not with us, but I want to talk about the Malay speech, because the so-called Malay speech, because I do think that a misunderstanding that I think needs to be talked about a little bit in the legacy as well. So we'll be back with Bob Look here on WXCO.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Joined by Bob Look here this morning. Brittany Merlot is not joining us this morning. She is already starting her celebrations. She bought her New Year's dress and everything, so she's getting ready to ring in 2025. But real quickly, the weather forecast: some isolated flurries early on this morning, then some isolated snow showers afternoon, otherwise cloudy and a high near 33. Tonight, if you're heading out to celebrate some isolated snow showers before 8 p.m., then isolated flurries between 8 and 10, otherwise mostly cloudy, a low of 19. And then for your New Year's Day tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies and a high near 23. The sun returns on Thursday with a high near 20. And right now, again, in downtown Wausau, overcast skies and 29 degrees. Kind of talking a little bit about the legacy of Jimmy Carter, and I tell you, it's an incredible legacy in terms of a man that lived 100 years, a man that served as a naval officer at the highest levels back in the day, nuclear naval officer, and then returned after his father got ill to run the peanut farm. But he always had that striving will to do more and more, and that ultimately led him to become a governor in the state of Georgia, where he announced that, I mean, there was a clip of his 1971 inaugural address as governor of Georgia saying that the era of racial discrimination has to end, that even beyond, you know, the laws of the 60s, but Georgia was still fighting it, and like many of the states in the South.
And that was not the popular opinion down there.
No, folks. Not at all.
A lot of people have this kind of rose-colored glasses that look back at it. Oh, there's just a small group of people that way. No, that was majority rule, and I'm going to be very blunt in saying this. That was majority rule, not just down South. You could do that. You could encompass this state itself and where I grew up, because, you know, I heard all the words that should not be said, or names that should not be cast upon people of a certain race or a religious belief. And trust me, nobody comes out of this without some scars. And I look at those scars, and the thing about when you get mature and start learning on your own and learning that we're all in this together, and that, you know, that this is all a bunch of hodgepodge or these prerequisite or preordained way of looking at people. Trust me, I went through that with friends, neighbors, family, and it's a constant evolution. And trust me, what I know now, I did not know back then, back when I was in my teens or my 20s. I had basically learned and kind of went on my own and listened to people and listened. And I think I told you that story about some of the guys I played sports with in high school. We used to get together. We'd just drive down the road from South Milwaukee, just down to a little playground that was north of Racine, a little brick, you know, grade school, and they had rims, basketball rims, that were like 8 feet high instead of 10 feet, because they're smaller kids. And so we would have pickup games, and we got to find some guys to play with. Well, we kind of sent through channels information to Racine St. Catherine, Racine Horlick, and that, hey, you know, because we wanted to play with other players not of our own backgrounds, because the only person of colored skin in my graduating class of nearly 500 was our foreign exchange student from Brazil. Okay, that's the painting, right, folks. 1973. Yeah. It was all white. Mostly Polish, not all Polish, but quite a bit Polish, European. But Armenian was about as dark-skinned as we got, as far as any of the... And it's just the way it was, folks. And this is in the day. This is the days of busing.
Right.
And that. And
early 70s, that was one of the huge stories.
So we, as the, you know, guys who were part of the athletic department at my high school, we wanted to play other, you know, and we approached it. And at first four kids came up and joined us. Then he passed the word on that, hey, we weren't some wackos and we're else going to, you know, make fun of them. And so we got this to be a regular thing we did every week, just playing pickup hoops and then, you know, talking and, you know, what's on their mind, what's on our minds. And we took it out upon ourselves. You weren't going to get it any other way.
No.
Unless you got thrown into a situation. Well, we went forward and figured it out. You know, we're all in this together. We all bleed.
Is that the ideals of youth, in a sense? That, you know, in a way you don't know any differently, that, hey, there's nothing. It's almost as though, hey, this, you haven't been told that is the wrong thing to do.
But when we were growing up in grade school, we went through the 60s. We heard, you know, about Martin Luther King Jr. We actually heard him. He was almost a regular as far as nightly news, going to Memphis to walk the picket line for the garbage workers who were looking for, you know. And even my father, who's a union guy and type, you know, and he would even point out to me that I remember when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, and my father's in his easy chair, and we're watching the news, and my father just blurted out, he was one of us, he said. And I went, he was just looking to try to make the working people get their fair shake. That told me a lot, that him, from his years of growing up, to get to that point, that was a major step.
Values.
Yeah.
It's the values that people hold within that connect.
And you learn. I mean, you know, I don't have all the answers. No. I like to find as much information as possible, because that's the only way we grow.
Going to talk about that Malay speech, because I think it's actually a little bit of a good segue, because talk about values, talk about a lot about the American psyche a little as well. But we have to have an information update, news, weather, and sports, and then we'll come back with more with Bob Look. It's New Year's Eve 2024. Yep, the final day of another year. We'll have more with Bob in just a few moments here on 98.9 WXCO.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
If you want me, you can find me left of center off of the strip. In the outskirts and in the fringes, in the corner out of the grip.
And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Again, you can join us at 715-382-9297. That's 715-382-9297. Call or text. That number works either way, or on the Civic Media app. Before we talk a little bit more, I wanted to talk about crisis of confidence Malay speech, but on New Year's Eve, and I thought it would be good to, and I think I've mentioned this to you previously, that back in the mid-90s, I had a friend who worked in the athletic department at the University of Wisconsin, and I think this must have been before you had become the public address announcer.
98 was when I started.
Yeah, so it was like 96 or 95 or something along those lines. And there was, in the back then, the Badgers in hockey would play some international team on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, we still did. We still did that in the early days at the Kohl Center, but kind of fell away from it.
But this friend of mine, who I'd gone to school with, and then you know, still was friends with, said, he gives me a call. Says, "Hey, our PA guy can't work New Year's Eve. You want to come down and do it?" I said, "Absolutely."
You bet.
And then when I get there, I think, what am I getting myself into? Number one. And number one is, I forget which international team it was, but, and I think I've said this to you previously as well, and I'm all scared to death to go downstairs and get all the pronunciations of the Badger team with Jeff Sauer. Yeah. But he was the nicest guy. I think one of the nicest people I ever came across.
He was
holding court with a few people, and he waves me in, and he's, you know, just gregarious, and you know, and talking to me, and that's one of my greatest New Year's Eve memories, is to have that opportunity to interact with a guy like Jeff Sauer, to be able to to sit with the microphone and hear the voice in the Dane County Coliseum and announce a University of Wisconsin hockey game. And because I'd grown up watching the Badgers on Channel 20 and watching Paul Brown and Bill Howard do the games on tape delay.
Used to go to games in the 70s and 80s, too.
So. Oh, just craziness. But that was, again, one of my all-time greatest New Year's memories. And it's a good thing that I had the chance before you grabbed a hold of that microphone.
I was a one-game sub. I wasn't even supposed to be there after that game.
And you made it a career, which is fantastic. No, I mean, that is. I mean, that's a wonderful story, too.
Jeff Sauer would not allow me not to come back.
And I can see how Jeff Sauer would do that.
Yes.
I mean, just the way that he came across. That's a wonderful man.
He was an outstanding individual. And he helped put, we're getting off track here.
But I just think
we got all morning. You know?
I tell you, there you go. Exactly right.
but the sled hockey with the amputees is now an Olympic event in the Paralympics, and he was the guy that spearheaded. He brought pickup games or exhibition games to play in between periods at Badger hockey games to get people, you know, to see these incredible athletes. Who just by a lot of times no fault of their own are still competing and still loving the game of hockey, even though it's played a different way on sled hockey.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the so-called Malaise speech because, again, during this era, as we go into 2025 and as we get ready for, again, for lack of a better time, I shouldn't be, you know, overly political, but the man-child's next administration, you had a man that was an adult in Jimmy Carter. And I saw a story yesterday about this that said basically this was almost the last opportunity where a president truly asked the American people to be a partner in terms of, in a sense, sacrificing, but not just sacrificing, but doing the right things to build a better future. Because when people saw the Malaise speech, the crisis of confidence speech, it's a lazy take. Because if you look at the speech, if you look at exactly what he talked about, it was so many things that are truly popular with the American people. And in the aftermath of that speech, he got a big bump because the people actually did wrap their arms around it. But the unfortunate aspect is there's not many others like Jimmy Carter that are willing to ask the American people to say, hey, if we join together, some things may be a little bit more difficult. You may have to turn your thermostat down a little bit.
Right.
You may have to try to carpool a little bit more. But since then, we have not had anybody that's truly asked us to do anything that takes us out of our comfort zone. And even after 9/11, I remember George W. Bush was asked about that. He said, nope, nobody has to change any way that they live, which was ridiculous, to be honest with you. But Jimmy Carter,
people knew better because we had to change. You know, then came more security in all the airports, I remember the color coded, you know, for looking for a possibility of some terrorist attack or something. You know, the alert level is now on orange or whatever, that color coded deal.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, President Carter's discussion, I mean, they made a big deal because he was sitting there with a sweater on. You know, again, he was talking to you, you know, trying to talk to you one, like you were sitting at the kitchen table and just discussing something with another family member. You know, and he was trying to break down that, you know, formal, you know, the suit and tie and looking very, but he wanted to be serious with the people. And I think a lot of the public took it to heart. I know I did as a youngster. Yeah, well, I shouldn't say youngster. I was an adult by now. But that's why I looked at it, because, hey, I would like to live a few more years. Hey, I made it to 2025. And I can see the difference in our the way atmosphere is acting up and things of that nature. Look at this, all the snow we have.
I know.
And it's December 30th.
This is the new normal, isn't it?
It's almost getting that way, isn't it?
I mean,
I'm sure there'll be those big blizzards.
Of course.
But, you know, overall, average-wise, it's just slowly going up.
And the thing about it is, I think one thing that the story I was looking at said that, in the reception of that speech. The white back then, in order to get a feel for the public, they would either send a telegram or call the White House switchboard.
And Morse code.
Right. But there were more calls, positive calls, to the White House than when Nixon had some of his speeches that were popular in terms of the Vietnam War policy. And the idea was that the American people, they can rise to the occasion. We've seen it so many times, but our leaders are not asking them to do it maybe as much as perhaps we did in the past. Is there anything fair about that?
I believe so. I think that a lot of political operatives or political people, when they go talking to the voters, really doesn't want to throw anything that will make the people think, oh gosh, you know, he's going to want to ask for more money and he's going to want us to do this or cut back. I get a kick out of listening to people today talking about, this will never work, these electric cars will never, where can you plug in your car around here now? Well, we're not talking about now. We're talking about a year down the road, mm-hmm. 2 years down the road, 5 years. And with the advent of more electric vehicles, and I see that every time I head down to Madison, and, you know, in fact, I even saw, you know, the electric van that the postman had here, and it's an electric vehicle. It's going to get here, folks. You know, I'm sure the people who first looked at the, you know, first looked at the horseless carriage was, oh, never, what are you going to do with the horses? You know, well, things change. And, you know, progress does move forward. But I, you know, you're talking about President Carter, and I just wanted to read this little quotation by the president back then. And this is from his book, Why Not the Best? Okay. And this is what President Carter wrote. We have a tendency to exalt ourselves and to dwell on the weaknesses and mistakes of others. I have come to realize that in every person there is something fine and pure and noble, along with a desire for self-fulfillment. Political and religious leaders must attempt to provide a society within which these human attributes can be nurtured and enhanced. Basically saying everyone has positives. Let's accentuate them. Let's not look at the negatives. Let's move the positives forward.
Well said. And it shows that, I think, says that if you are able to lift people, they have the ability. There's something within all of us innately that, and also if you keep pounding on people, if you say they have nothing going for them, then they're gonna believe it too. I mean, it's very much right. And
he's not only telling you that the glass is half full, he's happy that it's half full because at least he gets something to work with. That's the optimism part of things.
Something real quickly that made me take what you had said about his campaign from 19, because he started basically, and I've read about that. I have this book that's probably about 1,000 pages long, which is on the 1976 campaign that began basically 1972.
Oh yeah,
so he was talking about before even the 72 mm-hmm. election about getting involved in it. It was the right time for the right man, and as we look forward, as we look now where the Democratic Party is, where we have now another Trump administration coming, I have a sense that we have no idea the right person that is going to come out of these next couple of years, that we could be going into an era where something completely different does emerge from the opposition of MAGAism, of Trumpism, of the Republicanism of Donald Trump. I think we've seen a lot of, you know, subtle changes at times, but I think we're going to see something a little bit more significantly different. Do you think that there's a possibility that in the next 2 to 4 years?
Well, it will happen because, as anything goes, if somebody wants to pass legislation or pass something, it has to be done, you know, through the Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate got to structure the bill that the president can sign. The president can say all he wants, mm-hmm. or she wants,
mm-hmm.
she wants, or what direction he wants it to go. However, it's getting that down and written down. Yes, there are executive orders that can be put out there. Well, good, go ahead. But if there's an executive order that goes out there that 3/4 of the population go, whoa, you're putting yourself in political jeopardy, because once you burn that little bridge, getting some of those people that are kind of half and half on some of the things that you're aren't going to go with you that extra half.
And you see some of those people even now, even some Democrats, they're kind of making noises that they're willing to work with Trump in some ways. But
if it's something that it's positive, I mentioned that when I ran for the state senate, and it says, I don't care if a great idea or something that makes sense comes out of a Republican's mouth a Democrat's mouth.
Where are these great ideas coming from, Donald Trump, though? I know what you're saying.
Let's hear him out. If he comes out with something, he says, I want to do this. Okay, you take it out, and he says, okay, if you do this, just by mentioning the thought about taking back the Panama Canal, and all of a sudden the people go, "What? What are you? That's you're basically going to put a full scale war just down south of the continental United States, and that's not a good thing."
Really,
I'm trying to not. Be
I know I. You're
spectacular.
You're so fair. We're gonna take a time out. We're gonna lighten it up again. Our last segment with Bob Look, talk a little sports. I got a question, a baseball question actually.
Uh-oh.
Because former Brewer made a decision which I found to be very interesting. But we'll talk about that with Bob coming up here on WXCO.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
New Year's Eve, December the 31st, 2024. Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO. And on the Civic Media app, 8:52 is the time. So that means we got a little more than 15 hours left before the calendar switches over to 2025. The countdown is beginning. So
the big diamond ball is going to drop from the... Well, no, it doesn't happen here, does
exactly
it?
Right. Hey, let's talk a little bit of sports. But Ty, I'll ask you maybe a more general 2024 question. But this week we saw that Corbin Burns went to Arizona. I just found that to be interesting. To me, and again, I know Arizona made the World Series a couple of years ago. So, I mean, they missed by a game making the playoffs.
They got some offense.
But sometimes it feels like that's sort of where you go to fade away. I mean, I found it interesting that Burns could have gone to New York, going back with David Stearns and the Mets. He could have gone to some other major markets. Then he goes off to Arizona. I don't know. I just found it interesting he made that decision. And apparently, according to a story I saw, that Toronto and San Francisco both offered him more money, but he decided, because he apparently has a home down there as well.
Well, you know, there are all those things that are not common knowledge with people out there. You know, family issues a lot of times is a great deciding factor. Now, again, you know, Corbin went to Baltimore, and so he had had that time in Baltimore, got a little bit more East Coast attention.
Sure.
Than what you get if you're in the Midwest or if you're out West. You don't have, because Baltimore's always playing, you know, the Yankees, they're always playing the Red Sox, you know, a lot more games.
And so those press rooms or in the clubhouse and that are a little bit more congregated. A few more folks show up.
I mean, a little more edge to them, too.
When I was down at the Brewer locker room in the early 80s, you know, it was maybe about 5, 6, 7, you know, people, especially if it was, you know, like, you know, the Brewers are playing, you know, the Oakland A's or something.
Tuesday night.
Yeah, it's like, who the heck cares? But you're covering the game. But if you go out east, you know, into that corridor, you've got a lot more people who are shoving microphones in your face, asking for a take, asking for a comment. And Corbin, from what I understand, I've never talked to him myself personally, but he'll give you the time, but it's not one of these he'll want to be there all the time. You know, if we have a special that they want to talk about something in particular, yeah, he'll give you 10, 15 minutes of stuff. And other than that, a day in and day out, he really doesn't go for that. And some people are like that, and some people aren't. I know that, you know, when we're covering the old, you know, the Brewers, you know, back in their playing in the playoffs and getting into the World Series, there were people who were really favorites with the press people. One of them who was not was Gorman Thomas, because I think he personally just liked saying the words you can't use on radio or television. You can get away with it in the newspaper, right, because you can just, you know, edit it out. But there was so many times we would have to get into the production room and, you know,
and, long grind.
Yeah, I took a swing and I missed the out of it, you know, and you know, some people play it that way, but who knows? I mean, good luck for Corbin. Wish him well. I hope he does, you know, has success. Hope he stays healthy.
What do you think is the biggest sports story in Wisconsin in 2024?
Oh man,
Badgers downfall in football?
I don't know. I don't think that's a big story. That's kind of like an ongoing story. You know, something that is
Brewers surprising.
The Brewers for the whole year, which mm-hmm. no one really, you know.
500 was going to be a great year.
I was a silly guy who wrote in my Brew Crew review that they'd win 96 games.
You were ahead of the curve again.
You know, they
the
didn't.
Packers having a successful season. Is that a new story of the year?
I think the Brewers' surprise is maybe a little bit bigger because it's a surprise.
For the whole year, for that whole spring, because there was a lot of people waiting for that shoe to fall, you know. To,
yes.
Waiting for it yes. to go wrong, and it never did.
Never did. And yeah. It came so close. I mean, again, when you think about one pitch. Because you don't know. You just don't know what would happen next. The Mets went on to beat the Phils. I mean, you just don't know.
And who knows if that ball was caught and the Mets lost, and how much that would have propelled the Brewers to feel like, hey, this is our year.
Yes.
You never know.
Because they were dead in the water early in that series, and then it would be like almost a surprise because mm-hmm. they had come back. If you looked at 2025, you still have your Brew Crew review out there.
Takes a hiatus during off season.
What's your sense? I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done, obviously, between now and spring training. But at the same time, this group has proven that they seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, again, the front office people have done. You know, their general manager wins general manager of the year.
One for one.
The manager. You know, first time full time managing major league team. Manager of the year in the National League. That's a nice way to start out. But what's key for the Brewers right now is as we get, you know, things, the free agent stuff all settles down, end up with teams, then comes the spring trainings and the releases, who's going to need more playing time, looking mm-hmm. for better things, jockeying for trades. February is going to be a very busy month, and especially, I think, mid-March is going to get wild. I think we're going to have some surprises.
And they've been very good about finding those diamonds in the rough. I mean, they really have. You talk about, you know, developmental programs. You talked about the Badger football for years, developmental programs. The Brewers are actually a pretty good developmental program when it comes to guys that need to be shined up a little bit.
Yep.
And they do a really good job with that. So
to be continued.
We're going to take a time out for the top of the hour and another information update. Bob is consented to stick around for the next hour as well.
I have no place to go.
So we're going to talk to Ian as well, find out what's on his mind, and continue
here. I didn't have a chance to talk to Ian.
Yeah, so we're going to continue here on this New Year's Eve on 98.9 WXCO.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.